WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it's really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. This rainy, humid July evening. Thank you for tuning in to 95.9 WATD, your home for not only local news and music, but talk. My name is Kevin Tachi, and we have a great show lined up for you. Tonight's radio program, normally try to segment the show out to have four guests. There have been times when we've had less than four guests. Usually it has to be like a topic that folks can kind of come together and talk about. Usually it's something that needs a little bit more than a half hour to talk about. But usually we try to use 20 to 30 minutes to talk about various topics and try to talk about some of the things that are prevalent, things that are relevant that are happening here in and around the South Shore. Some of it's serious. Sometimes just provide you information that certain things exist or are going on. We start things off right after we check in with Renee Hamilton one final time. We'll start with the State House report, as we have State Senator Patrick O'Connor will be joining us. He'll call in. We'll get a pulse on the finger of things that are going on in his district, as he is the senator for the Plymouth Norfolk District. Following him, we're going to talk a little solar. We have Mike McHugh. He's a representative for East Coast Renewable Energy. Well, you know, knowing, seeing where fuel prices have gone, whether you have a gas motor vehicle or if you heat your home with gas, natural gas, or oil, there are options out there. So we'll talk a little bit about renewable energy. And Mike McHugh will give us all the details on that. Second hour of the program, we're just getting started. We're going to speak with Alex and Sorcha from South Shore Buds. We'll find out about the newest marijuana recreational shop here in Marshfield, located on Route 139. Also talk with them about an upcoming event this Saturday, the 23rd, Shorefest. Chat with them about that. And as if having one state senator isn't enough, we're going to have a second one. You bought one, you get one for free. State Senator Mike Brady will join us. We'll chat a little bit about economic incentives that might be lurking in the new fiscal 2023 budget. I think we are in fiscal 2023. They're still haggling and discussing and voting on certain items. We'll talk with the senator about that in a transportation bond bill and many other things. Again, that Senator Brady, represents the 2nd Plymouth Bristol District. And then we're going to close things out with Joe Weeks. Joe happens to be a senior vice president of programs for the Italian Home for Children, and talk about some of the great things that they offer and that they do. We've had Joe on the show previously. Joe, of course, is someone who is a licensed mental health counselor, also a national certified counselor for over a dozen years. We'll chat with him about what he's doing with this organization in just a few moments. Just to keep things in perspective, remember, if you miss any of our shows, we do our best to post those as a podcast that you can take with you anywhere at any time. I think right now it's time for us to find out what's happening out on the roadway. Being brought to you on this end by Brennan Smoke Shop, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, Weymouth, and now Hudson, New Hampshire.
Listen, guys, some of us aren't even in the first quarter of our lives. Some of us, me, are just getting to halftime. These people over here are the biggest part of the team, and they're at the end of their fourth quarter. We got to get up off the bench and start playing this game hard, because if we don't, we're going to lose this game of life, of survival. We don't sit on the bench and watch our teammates lose. We get up and we play harder and we work harder than the other team. We play every quarter like it's the fourth quarter. Home runs, knockouts, strikeouts, hat tricks, triple plays, Hail Marys, QB sack in the fourth quarter, interceptions, half court shots. Let's go, guys. Let's go. We need the whole team off the bench and in the game today.
Brennan Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, and now in Hudson, New Hampshire. Brennan Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk.
We return all charged up from hearing that spot from Brennan's Smoke Shop. Quite a bit of vinegar to his latest spot here. Hey, so we are here, first segment of the evening, the State House Report. And who best to get the latest that's happening up on Beacon Hill, but from State Senator Patrick O'Connor. Let me see, I want to try to list off all of the, just off the top of my head here, all of the great communities that Patrick O'Connor serves. His district, Cohasset, Weymouth, Duxbury, Hingham, Hull, Marshfield, Norwell, and Scituate, making up the Plymouth Norfolk District. We want to say hello to the gentleman who represents that district, State Senator Patrick O'Connor.
Hey, Kevin, how's it going?
How's it going?
It's going good. It's been a while, but I was listening to your intro there, and you got quite a show lined up, including one of my colleagues up there, so I think your visitors or your listeners are going to get quite a bit of information of the stuff that's going on up in the State House as we look to close out the legislative session by the end of this month. And so, actually, you talked about the budget. We were able to get that done today, so reason why I'm not going to be able to be in there in person with you is that we were able to finalize all of the differences between the House and the Senate budget and pass a $52 billion budget that's going to run the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And, you know, it's about 17 days late, 17 days into the legislative, or 18, I should say, into the month. But I'm glad we were able to get it done, and it really is a solid budget that really highlights a lot of the things that people in Massachusetts care about.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, the one thing over the past few years, many years, I feel that a lot of elected leaders, whether it's on the state level or even the federal level, is looking out for, we look out for all class of people. But what's been fast eroding these days is the middle class. Talk to me about proposals to help those folks who need a little bit of relief in the middle class.
Yeah, and there is a tremendous need for tax cuts in Massachusetts, and it's been something that we have, the Republicans and even some of the more moderate to conservative Democrats fiscally, we've been proposing these tax cuts for quite some time. We finally have an accord now between the Senate President, the Speaker of the House, and the Governor to actually give hardworking families tax credits and tax breaks in Massachusetts. One of them is to increase the senior circuit breaker tax credit to double that. That was endorsed by AARP. That's going to help about 100,000 senior citizens in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts be able to provide more for themselves, which I think is incredibly important right now with prices of everything going through the roof, especially gasoline. But even just regular household items, and we need to make sure our senior citizens, a lot of the hands that built this great country of ours, that government has their back during this period of time. Another one is the Earned Income Tax Credit, which goes to middle to low income families to give them some more relief. The other one, which I think is going to really help a lot of families, is the Child and Dependent Care Tax Credit, which we're also going to double that. And then the estate tax, which has been something that I've been working on for well over 6 years to try and change. Right now, the threshold's $1 million. And when you look at the home sales and when you look at what people have inside of their savings now, it's very easy for an estate to reach $1 million. And that's when the state starts hitting families, you know, during a period of time that they're going through the estate of an individual family member that passed away. And we've heard stories from people who did not live extravagant lifestyles, but made good investments and had a home that was worth, you know, $700,000, $600,000. And then coupled with all the other different aspects of their estate, they hit over the $1 million threshold. So there's a lot of things that we just are doing now to update our tax code, because it's been so long since we've actually provided relief to the residents of this state, the taxpayers, the people who fund our government. And that I do believe in total, those tax cuts are about $500 million. And then there's also the giveaway, which I'm not thrilled about as far as the stimulus check. It's great. So people that make between $38,000 and $100,000, those individuals will get $250 in the mail. And then joint filers who make upwards of $150,000 would get $500 through the mail. So all told, of the state's coffers, and I know that was a lot of information I just kind of put out there all at once, yep. But all told throughout the state's coffers, we're going to be giving $1 billion back to the hardworking taxpayers of the state. So I'm very happy, because a lot of these proposals have been things that I've been trying to you know, push forward as policy for multiple years. I'm glad that we finally got there. But I do believe that we can do more. And you talk about the middle class, you talk about hardworking families in the state, and I don't think that we do enough in government to provide them with a better quality of life. And that's something that I will continue to work on and have been working on for quite some time. But again, I can't criticize this too much, because a lot of these are a lot of things that we need. But we also need to do more, because the state's flush with cash right now. And we need to be getting more of that back out from government and into more taxpayers' hands.
And knowing that, you know, here we've seen rising fuel costs, inflation, you know, rising, you know, more than we've seen in many decades. Maybe this is important to be able to give back in this manner, yes?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you look at all these different economic indicators, most of them nationally driven, and Massachusetts needs to do something to you know, to protect their citizens from a lot of these things that are happening that our government has really no control over. When you look at inflation, you look at gas prices, a lot of those have been directly linked to decisions that have been made down in D.C., some of which, you know, people can agree with or disagree with. But what we really need to do now is to make sure our citizens are taken care of during this very turbulent economic time that we're in nationally. But again, in Massachusetts, our economy is incredibly strong, and our tax revenue figures are actually in tremendous surplus, and like we've never seen before. When we closed the books on the budget today, we ended with a deposit into our stabilization fund, which now puts our rainy day funds, our emergency reserves, at $7.3 billion.
Wow.
Which is the highest that they've ever been. And that is also there's still $2.5 billion of American Rescue Plan money that the federal government gave to us over a year ago. And there's good economic indicators in Massachusetts, despite the craziness of the economic concerns that we have federally.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we have State Senator Patrick O'Connor is our guest, talking a little bit about the budget that's been, I believe, hammered out here. Larry Nelson actually fielded a call from Judy from Marshfield. And if you could, Larry, did she give you the underpinnings of, I don't want to put her on the air, but could you tell me what she had? She actually had a question in regards to the senior circuit breaker tax credit. Is it a matter of an amount that she's looking for? I guess Larry's going to find out now, but she had a question in regards to what the increase or the number.
So the amount of money would go from 1170 to 2340. So an exact doubling of the tax credit that senior citizens over the age of 65 currently get right now. And I think that it's, you know, crucial, as we talked about before, for tackling inflation and helping seniors especially stay in their homes. So I'm very happy that that's going to be something that we'll be taking up on Thursday. It's guaranteed to pass just because, as I said, an accord has been reached between the Senate president, the speaker, and the governor. But this is going to be something that's going to, you know, help, as I said before, about 100,000 base daters that are facing some serious economic concerns, especially our seniors.
All right, so I want to move on to the early education and care bill. Now, I believe that you served on the Special Legislative Early Education and Care Economy Review Commission, which actually put forth a final report. Can we talk about this bill?
Absolutely. So we were able to pass this last formal session that we had last week, and this is a really important bill. So it really came to our attention, not just during COVID, but before COVID, that we have major challenges inside of our early education care system, and that we need to do a lot more in government to make it work. So families right now have been reaching out to us, especially after COVID, with significant challenges in trying to find childcare. And when we looked into this, it's a workforce problem. It's a issue where there's very little career ladder for individuals who enter into this space. The supports that are there during COVID for providers themselves, we made permanent. And it's really going to, in my opinion, be the biggest piece of legislation policy that we've been able to pass to expand access and affordability to childcare. And one of the things that we do is right now the subsidy eligibility level for an individual family of four is $65,000. And again, that hasn't been updated in many, many, many decades. And so we modernized that and said that every family that makes up to $164,000 is going to be eligible for some support from the state, and that the state has to be a better partner to families, to providers, and to employees that work in childcare, because this is such a crucial element to our economy as a whole, where it's not just making sure that the care that's being provided to children and to families is top-notch, but it's also making sure that people have that care available to them so that they themselves can go and contribute and continue to grow the Massachusetts economy. So we've looked at this from every lens for 2 years. This commission lasted. It was mainly done through Zoom. Towards the end, we had a couple in-person meetings, but it was, I would say, probably about three or four times a month. So not weekly, but just under it, we were meeting on this and really listening to every single individual that wanted to, inside of this industry and outside of the industry, to give us a good glimpse into what the problems were and how we could provide solutions to some of those problems to make sure that this system is better. And we put together a comprehensive bill with tons of recommendations, and we passed it. And, you know, some of the elements of this are just updating some of the things to make sure that more families are eligible. Another thing is to make sure that there is a career ladder in place, that there's educational attainment and work experience that increases compensation for individuals that work inside of this space, and that that there's more access and availability, because that's the two things that we are seeing right now throughout the Plymouth and Norfolk districts, the South Shore essentially, is that there's not enough providers. And the reason why there's not enough providers is because there's not enough employees. And therefore, childcare becomes a situation where individual families may make the decision that one person decides to stay home and watch the kids just because they can't find adequate care close enough to them. We want to provide people with a better opportunity, that they don't have to make that decision, that they can continue to choose childcare because there's going to be world-class providers that are close to them, and that the people that work in those companies are being compensated at a much greater rate than they are right now, and they can look at it as a career and not just sort of a step that they take in their process of becoming a teacher or becoming a daycare provider themselves or going into another profession. This is going to be something that people value as much as we should. And I think that that's one of the things in government, when you look at human services as a whole, one of the things that I find most disturbing is how we don't value them the amount that they deserve to be. And I think that this is one step in being able to close that gap that we have in human services, in early education and care.
And just before I ask you to kind of tick off some of the money you were able to, as when we do political forums, one of the things that says, bring home the bacon. This give you an opportunity to talk about what you've been able to secure for your district. But I want to stay, I want to ask one final question in regards to the early ed and care bill. And talking about the early education centers, I mean, requiring them to develop somewhat of a career ladder, how important is that going to be in order for folks to be able to matriculate in through the system and feel as though they're having an impact on early education?
Well, I think when you look at this through just a logical lens, if you're an early education teacher that's working at groups like South Shore Stars, which is great on the South Shore, and you're providing early education and care for individuals, some of which are very vulnerable individuals inside of our communities, and that you have very similar qualifications to a regular public school teacher, but you are making 45% less than they're making, and you can go to a school right down the street and essentially apply and get accepted. They are working the summers because early education and care centers especially have summer programming, so you don't have the summers, you don't get them off. You're probably more than likely not part of a teacher's union or a union in general, so you don't have those employment protections that are part of it. It just doesn't make sense. And what we need to do is we need to understand that these people are teachers, and they're teaching some of the kids that need early intervention and some of these kids that need further assistance inside of their educational needs, and that's a huge value that they're doing this for, and that in a time in which we're flush with cash, in a time in which we're seeing unprecedented economic growth in Massachusetts, we need to make the career ladder very similar to that of public education, because we can't have human service employees, and I consider early education and care a human service, I really do. We can't have them competing against each other. And we see this all the time at our nursing homes, at our facilities for individuals with disabilities. These people who work in these jobs are not being paid enough, and so they're competing against places like Target and Starbucks, just as the same that early education and care employees are competing against public schools. We need to create a better system in its entirety in human services to make sure that people get paid a lot more money for the jobs that they do, because these jobs are very, very difficult. And the second is that we try and incentivize people to want to work in the profession and not, create a structure that's always competing against something else, whether it be the Target, the Starbucks, or a public school, but that we're going to lose qualified, good human beings who are in the caring industry, the caring force. We're going to lose those people, and Massachusetts can't afford that. And so I'm glad that we started here. I do think we've got to move on to increasing funding for people who service individuals with disabilities, for those who help in the substance use space. You name it, in human services, I think we're going through a bit of a crisis right now just because of the lack of staff and workforce development that we have currently in there. So again, this really fixes the early education and care component of that.
Let's talk about monies that you're able to secure and fight for your district. Close to $100 million, whether it's education or local aid, or even securing funding for the Talk Information Center or Weymouth 400. Talk to me about being able to fight for your district to get the money to help different organizations and help communities.
So I'm privileged to have been now for the past 3 years one of the three chief negotiators of the budget from the Senate side. And at the end of the budget, when the House passes it and the Senate passes it, six people get together and hash out all the differences. And this has allowed me to really push a lot of the priorities that we care about here on the South Shore. I feel incredibly blessed to be able to be in the position to advocate for so many of these organizations that do amazing work on the South Shore. When you talk about the Talking Information Center, we got them $350,000. We got $50,000 for the Williams Food Pantry, $50,000 in a grant that we were able to get to make sure that every single child that's in DCF care right now gets the ability to go to summer camp. $25,000 to support a nonprofit that we've supported in the past of and named in honor of Maddie McCoy, which is Maddie's Promise, who's an 11-year-old girl from Hingham who bravely fought cancer, a rare and aggressive type of cancer. And this organization is going to look at how to really solve rare pediatric cancers. We got $20,000 for the whole Life Saving Museum, $20,000 for sowing seeds right down the street. $20,000 for a organization, Type 1, which is a Hingham-based group that wants to see a future without Type 1 diabetes. And honestly, $90-plus million for our communities, for them to invest in critical things like education and road repairs and police and fire and just so many other organizations that we've worked with throughout the years that I've either heard on ATD or I've heard on or read in the local papers that they're doing great work. I always try and keep my finger on the district and really have an understanding of what's going on and where the needs are, and then to invest in those organizations that are doing this. And a lot of these organizations are doing things that really supplement the whole of what the South Shore is and builds up the community that for the past 6 years since I've been in office, I've really tried to continue to foster and help grow. And the South Shore is awesome. The people are amazing. And the things that we're doing are really special. And they're going to have a tremendous impact, not just in our little place in the world, but really the whole of the state and the whole of our country. Because some of these people that I've been able to meet throughout my time in office have just been incredible and really have an amazing ability to collaborate, to work together, and to really make change in the world. And I think at the end of the day, that's what people most want to see in government.
Senator, I want to thank you for joining us, but before I let you go, I'll give you an opportunity to give out information whether you have a constituent who wants to reach out to your office or somebody who's interested in helping you get elected to another term come later this year. How can they find out information on either end?
Sure. So on the campaign side, we have O'ConnorForSenate.com, which has been our sort of virtual home. And then for the State House, 617-722-1646. And we're more than happy to talk to anyone at any point in time about any concern that they have, large or small. Just give us a call. We have some great people that work in the office that want to help individuals provide a solution to their problem every single day of the week. So give us a call, reach out if you'd like to help out, and thank you, again to everyone that listens in for the opportunity to be able to serve you.
And Senator, thank you for always, anytime that I reach out to Anthony to try to schedule you to come on, that usually it's something that is paramount on the schedule, and you're usually talking to me that Monday night. So I appreciate what your team does and your availability.
Happy to do it. Thanks, Kevin.
You got it. There he is. State Senator Patrick O'Connor, our guest. We're going to step aside. There's more Monday Night Talk, but you can't go anywhere. You're tuned in to 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
There I was in my business suit, all dressed up, just uptight as I could possibly be. And I don't remember much of what was said at that first AA meeting. It was more the feeling of the meeting itself.
What I notice about AA is it sort of helps me to relax and learn to really be happy with my sobriety.
That's exactly what Alcoholics Anonymous does. It teaches us how to live without drinking. It teaches us how to have fun and really enjoy life without drinking.
Visit AA.org for more information and download the Meeting Guide app to find a meeting near you.
And it's no
Plymouth Memorial Hall is your home for year-round live entertainment on the South Shore. Coming soon on Wednesday, July 27th at 8, renowned Irish folk band The High Kings. Then on Saturday, August 20th at 8 p.m., Indigo Girls.
Hide yourself for me.
finally, journey back in time with The 60s Show on Saturday, September 17th at 8. Tickets for The High Kings on July 27th, Indigo Girls on August 20th, and The 60s Show on September 17th at Plymouth Memorial Hall are on sale now at memorialhall.com.
Hey, it's John Shea here from Almost Famous Radio, introducing you to independent bands and musicians from across New England. Brought to you by Tiny and Sons Glass. Coming up tomorrow night, another full show in store for you. Tons of new music and upcoming show dates to pass along. And I'll be joined on the WATD Tiny Stage by Boston singer-songwriter Jill McCracken. That's tomorrow, 8 till 10, right here at 95.9 WATD. And always streaming at 95.9WATD.com.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, we are back. You know, it's too bad you can't have some of the things that you talk about during the break. You can't. We got Alex and Sarko who are here from South Shore Buds. They're going to be coming up at 7 o'clock. They're kind of just kicking back, relaxing. But right now, we can talk with Mike McHugh. Mike is going to talk with us about renewable energy, East Coast renewable energy.
Hi, Kev.
How
long
are you,
time
pal?
No see. I'm glad to see you. I'm doing well. I hope you're the same.
Tell us a little bit about East Coast renewable energy, because knowing that our energy costs are going through the roof, or at least they've leveled off at the moment. I mean, just up the street, the gas was $4.14, and my God, the line down the street. It's temporary, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But I'm sure folks want to find a way to, if you can save a buck, you're going to have a conversation. We're going to have a conversation about that.
Sure, yeah? Sure. East Coast Renewable, they are a full-service company in terms of renewable energy, whether that be solar panels, battery storage, the canopies that you see going up in a lot of places these days. But what we're primarily doing at the moment is we're trying to promote a Department of Energy Resources program called Community Solar. And what Community Solar is, I'm sure all of your listeners have driven down the expressway or driven through Rochester or Middleborough or places like that and seen the massive solar farms that have been going up for, you know, quite some time now, and they continue to go up. One of the issues that the state had, along with either Eversource or National Grid, depending upon where we were located, is that the solar farms aren't necessarily getting the amount of enrollment as necessary for them to go active. A solar farm needs to be 90% committed to before it can go active. So the state, Eversource and National Grid and the various solar farms got together and they agreed upon creating this program called Community Solar. And in a nutshell, what either a homeowner can do, a business can do, a municipality can do is enroll in this program. It costs nothing. It also costs nothing to leave if you wanted to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And when they enroll, basically what they are doing is now their energy coming from their provider, whether it's National Grid or Eversource, is energy that was sent to that utility from a solar farm. So what that allows any sort of an entity to do is to participate in using renewable energy without the need of solar panels or any other equipment. You know, there are some places, especially the historical districts, where you couldn't put in a panel or any equipment. Or there are some places that the rooftop couldn't hold the panels. And there are some places who don't want the panels. However, they still have a commitment and interest in trying to move us away from fossil fuels. And this allows them to do it. And the very nice part about this, not that what I just discussed wasn't nice, but in addition to that, the energy user, the account, will receive a 10% credit off of the total bill. What happens is the solar farm that they are committed to, and committed is probably the wrong word, but the solar farm to which they are virtually connected pays their electric bill. And then the solar farm comes back and backbills that account at 90%. So you've saved 10%. If you're spending $1,000 a month on electricity, that drops down to $900 a month. If you're spending $10,000 a month, it's down to $9,000 a month. And it adds up very, very quickly. A good example is a ice rink that we signed up over on Route 1. And they, surprisingly to me, they spend about $250,000 a year on electricity. So this particular program will save them $25,000 a year. It's a no-brainer. Plus the fact that they know that they've made a commitment to renewable energy, and they can let their customers and the community know that they are also, you know, they're using renewable energy, and that's attractive to a lot of people.
So you're basically saying is this is somewhat cost effective and will save somebody money. Is there how much energy can be reaped from these solar farms, and is there ever going to be any time when it is going to be a fluctuation in the amount of power that is generated by these particular farms?
Well, it's funny you should ask me that, because I've had a few people ask me this, and I'm going to be honest that I wasn't aware of this until I got into this line of work. Some people, I mean, we live in New England, we have some significant snowfall at times. Some people have asked me if the solar panels are covered in snow, what will they do? Will their energy still keep coming? And the answer is yes. If there is for some reason a hiccup in the energy coming from the field, National Grid or Eversource will switch that person back or that account back over to the other electricity they're getting from a coal burner or such. And then switch back to the solar as soon as the solar field comes back online. But unbeknownst to me until recently, the solar panels actually have a heating element in them. And regardless of whether it snows or not, they don't stay covered for very long. So the long and short of it is, if you're on this particular program, the only time you're really going to lose power is the same way you would lose power now. Somebody hits the pole in front of your house or down the street. Other than that, it's seamless, it's transparent, it's no heavy lifting, it's a signature on an agreement. And as I said, if for some reason somebody who is participating wishes to not participate anymore, they just let us know and we remove them.
Yeah, isn't there, like, if you look at your electric bill, is there not like a little notation as far as if you are somebody solar or somebody who's interested, that it would tell you that some of your energy is coming from a solar farm? Or is that something you have to specifically sign up for?
You specifically have to sign up for it.
Okay.
Which actually surprises me that you have to agree to take solar power. I believe that'll probably change in the coming years. I actually had a conversation with a state senator a few months back as he was interested in using it, his business. And when I was explaining it to him, he said, look, Mike, in all honesty, I don't really care. When I turn on the faucet in the sink, as long as the water comes out and the water's clean, I don't care whether it comes from the Quabbin or the Monadnock or well, I don't want to say MWRA because that's expensive. But and that's exactly how this works. Other than the fact that you'll save 10% and that you'll know that you're using renewable energy, there is no impact, really.
So this is a subscription?
It is an enrollment, a free enrollment.
Okay.
The person who enrolls or the company that enrolls never pays a dime. They don't pay my company a dime. They don't pay any
extra.
It's
not like Netflix.
No.
Okay.
No.
Just checking.
Yeah, but and they never pay a dime to the solar field.
Okay.
Quite the opposite. They get, again, the 10% off. And if that's a homeowner and they're using $100 a month in electricity, well, they'll save $10. And again, if you're this great big, huge ice rink and you're spending $250,000, you're going to save $25,000 a year, and that's going to add up.
Now, let's say an organization or a residential person wants to do this, what would you do to kind of look at it, find out what their use is? Is it a matter of just looking at their electric
bill? It is, Kev. Basically, what we do is we get copies of all the electric bills for, you know, with a company. Usually, they have two or three accounts. A homeowner's usually one. But what we'll do is if you look on the left side of your electrical bill, it has the monthly breakdown of what you've used. Mm-hmm. And we're not looking at the expense. We're looking at the kilowatt hours. And we'll figure out, on average, how many kilowatt hours that particular entity has used in the course of a year. And we use that to estimate and put into a solar farm their particular needs. And you'll have a solar farm, a newer solar farm that has a lot of capacity, and will fit a bigger account into that particular farm. And if it's a smaller account, we'll try to, you know, jigsaw puzzle that in. I shouldn't say try. We do. But it's all a matter of where things fit, what works best for actually all of the parties involved.
So, all right, so let's say I agree. Okay, I think this is a great idea. Is it kind of a seamless process that it's a matter of I agree, and before I know it, there's a matter of time before I start seeing information in regards to who I'm hooked up with?
Yeah, the way that it would work, or the way that it does work, is...
I should say assigned.
Well, what happens is we will assign them to a particular field, and that particular field may not go active. As I said, they need to have 90% of capacity before they can throw the switch on. So when somebody enrolls, it may be a month, it may be a couple of months before they start getting their savings. But they will see that savings on their bill. Again, it'll come across, it'll say negative $1,000. You don't save the whole $1,000. You get a bill within the next couple of weeks from the solar farm that has paid that $1,000 for $900. And that, as it moves forward, it's basically an application form that the entity would fill out with us. We review their electric bill. Mm-hmm. And then when we find the particular field, some fields will have you do a DocuSign online. Some fields actually still do the handwritten contracts. But that's the end of it. That's the end of it. Other than you get your bill every month and you save 10%, and you help wean us off of fossil fuels.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about renewable energy. And we have Mr. Mike McHugh here from East Coast Renewable Energy kind of talking us through this. Probably one of my final questions here. And it's like, what if I'm a customer of National Grid, or what if I'm a customer of Eversource? Is it a matter of that if I'm with one company or the other, I won't qualify, or?
No, not at all. Anyone who gets an electric bill from either of those two providers is eligible to sign up for the program. The only downside to all of this is if you live in a town or a city that has a municipal electric department, there have been no agreements on the state level. I've worked with a municipal electric department for a few years in a past life, and each municipal electric department is sort of a different animal. So I think it was probably hard for the state to put their arms around each and every one and figure out their nuances. But National Grid, Eversource, they're wide open.
So we want to thank someone called in and actually says, why would everyone just sign up if you're going to save money? Wouldn't everyone?
Well, that's what I think. Give me a call, give the company a call, and we'll sign you up. I couldn't agree with that caller more. When I reach somebody, especially in a business, who understands it and can make decisions, it's a no-brainer. It really is a no-brainer. And again, the nice thing about it is if for some reason somebody doesn't want to save the 10% anymore, you just let us know and we take you off. We don't ask for a termination fee. There's nothing like that, nothing whatsoever.
Wow. They just need to give you a 180 days notice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So fun. Well, here's the payoff right here, and that is, if folks want to find out more information.
Uh-huh, here we go. Well, they can email me.
Okay.
And my email address is M McHugh, that's M-M-C-C-U-E, at ECRenewable, no S, it's a singular, .com. Or they could give me a call at 508-989-4837. And I am sure that 99% of the people listening right now will be eligible and will save money and will help reduce our reliance on fossil fuels.
If only this was a visual medium. There's actually on the information that Mike gave me, there's a QR code that you could just scan, but it's not, it's radio, so you'll just have to take the information that Mike gave you. Anything that we have missed in our conversation but you need to share?
The only thing I would mention, Kev, I've had some people ask me why they haven't heard of this. And in one of my past lives, I wondered why I hadn't heard of it. And it turns out that, as we all know, the state doesn't have a lot of people to go around and promote things. And it was started in 2019. And what happened within the last couple of years? COVID. So that kind of threw everything off. So they've got us out promoting it. And that's what I'm doing here right now.
Mike, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kevin.
And that concludes the first hour of Monday Night Talk. We're going to step aside. There's more on deck. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Up next,
WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton.
Inaction and confusion in Uvalde school shooting report.
The term dereliction of duty comes up.
Indiana mall shooter killed by
a young 22-year-old man who stopped this violent act.
Record-breaking European heat wave.
I don't like the sun, to be honest.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Disturbing is how Texas Governor Greg Abbott describes systemic failures of the law enforcement response to the Uvalde school shooting cited in an investigative report. Reporter Chris Fox.
In a statement, Governor Greg Abbott said critical changes are needed as a result of the Texas House findings that a series of mistakes were made by law enforcement, a far cry from his initial response the day after the shooting.
As horrible as what happened, it could have been worse.
The anger of victims' families flared after the report was released. Santos Salazar lost his granddaughter, Layla Salazar.
All I see is somebody covering up somebody else.
Ruben Mata's great-granddaughter, Tess Mata, was also one of those killed.
But they're saying we already knew it. They were cowards.
Chris Fox for CBS News, Austin.
A gunman kills three people and wounds two in a suburban Indianapolis mall before a legally armed bystander shoots and kills him. Greenwood Mayor Mark Myers.
This young man, Greenwood's good Samaritan, acted within seconds, stopping the shooter and saving countless lives.
Police have recovered at least three weapons, multiple magazines, and over 100 rounds of ammunition. Testimony is underway at the sentencing hearing for the Parkland, Florida school shooter.
Teacher Brittany Sinich wiped away tears as she testified about the February 2018 massacre at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida.
Almost instantly, I called 911. They couldn't hear me over the sound of the gunshots. It was so incredibly loud.
The prosecutor told a jury the gunman, who is now 23, should be executed because he killed his 17 victims in a cold and calculated manner. The gunman faces either death or life in prison after pleading guilty to 17 counts of murder. Jim Crisilda, CBS News.
Welcome water fountain mist in 102-degree Paris heat. CBS's Vicky Barker says the European heat wave is endangering life and property.
Evacuation shelters have been set up in southwest France for the more than 20,000 people who've had to flee wildfires in recent days. And French meteorologists are warning of what one calls a heat apocalypse from the record temperatures stretching across much of Europe.
Retirement ahead for the federal government's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, says he plans to leave at the end of President Biden's term in January 2025. On Wall Street, the Dow closed down 216 points. Now this.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance yours, Rocket Mortgage can help you get there. For home loan solutions that fit your life, Rocket can.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about one out of two men and one out of three women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than two or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical Faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
Hi, my name is Alex Bazantin, and I'm running for Plymouth County Commissioner. I am the former chairman of the Abington Conservation Commission, former Abington Water Commissioner, and now serving in my second term as Abington Selectman. I am currently serving on the executive board of the Plymouth County Advisory Board. If you would like to learn more about my candidacy, please visit my website at alexbazantin.org or follow me on Facebook. I am Alex Bazantin for Plymouth County Commissioner, and I approve this message.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right. We are back after a lengthy break. Fear not, hour number two. Just a quick teaser. Joe Weeks with the Italian Home for Children and State Senator Mike Brady will be joining us in a bit. But right now, we're going to talk with the fine folks from South Shore Buds, 985 Plain Street. That's Route 139, few folks who drive by all the time. In Marshfield, we have Alex and Sarka. They are, respectively, Alex is the general manager.
Hello.
Sarka is the assistant general manager.
Hey.
And they're going to talk with us about their fantastic store, all the things, maybe some of the misconceptions, and, drum roll please, big event this Saturday, Shore Fest, which we'll find out what all the great things are going to be entailed in it. Let's first talk a little bit about South Shore Buds. How did it originate?
Yeah, so we opened up in December of last year, and it's been a wild ride ever since. This summer has been really exciting to be in Marshfield and a part of that, you know, beach vibe community and all the good things that come along with that. So it's been very interesting being in the first year in a town that has previously not had access to adult use cannabis. So we've made a lot of friends, we've made a lot of regulars, and we have a wonderful staff that is just very educated and passionate about what they do, and it's just a great place to be.
How important is it, you know, knowing that you're in your first 7 months of business, that you're starting to see success and you're gaining regulars? How important is that?
I mean, it's everything to us, honestly. Like, when we opened, it was community, you know, partnership was something we really wanted to focus on, which is why, you know, we are putting on this event this summer for our community. We have a ton of local vendors coming and food trucks and music, but mostly we just want to be able to give back to the community and work with them to make a good impact. You know, a lot of people that have heard of cannabis, they don't necessarily, you know, they don't necessarily know much about it, and we want to kind of expose people to it in a way that's not, you know, it's not overbearing in any way, but also it's a fun way for us to interact with the community and get to know people.
Now, I have to ask you, Sarka, and that is do you feel that with more adult recreational stores opening, that the stigmatism has gone away?
I definitely think that with more stores, it is breaking down stigmatism with cannabis. But, you know, in South Shore Buds, we do our own part to ensure that we're trying to break down stigma around cannabis as well. We've recently gone to a couple of different local senior centers and done educational presentations to ensure that we're being inclusive with the community that we have. It's definitely breaking down a lot of stigma, but there's still some stigma that comes with it. And I feel like that's just, honestly, down to the fact that some people don't have the correct or the most up-to-date information about cannabis itself and the benefits that it can have for a variety of different people.
I've had, you know, I've had interviews with folks who, when it was first medical marijuana, and talking about how it has helped individuals, especially somebody who is suffering from cancer, and they're going through treatments, and how it has helped them quality of life can sometimes be very important. You use the term cannabis. Mm-hmm. Well, what's the difference between cannabis and marijuana?
Honestly, it's just the difference between names. There's a lot of slang that comes with our industry. So cannabis, marijuana, weed, grass, they kind of all mean the same thing. But a lot of the time, it's referring to the cannabis plant itself and the flower that it produces, which a lot of the time, in turn, is a product that people can utilize.
And it's not just necessarily smoke. There are so many different elements to cannabis. Am I correct, Alex?
Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing, you know, innovation through cannabis all the time. Right. And it's a great place to kind of get to understand the different types of cannabis. So we have, you know, seltzers, edibles in forms of, you know, gummies, chocolate, ice cream even. Like, it's kind of wild the things that they're coming up with.
Ice cream, huh?
Yeah. Wow. It's delicious.
Do they deliver the ice cream?
We can't, unfortunately. I wish we could, but it's available in store, frozen. It stays frozen for a while, so it definitely will make it through the car ride home, but we have a lot of different options for everybody, and especially those that are nervous about even, you know, trying a product. We have low-dose options. We have CBD options. You know, I personally use a lot of our products to help sleep and to help relax. And for there's just so many uses that people find with this plant. You talk to people, and you hear a different story from everybody about how it's benefited them.
Let's talk about delivery.
Yeah.
Is there an option for delivery? What can be delivered? And is it just to the community of Marshfield or beyond?
So, yeah, we have, we work with Bud Bus, and we deliver.
Wait, what's that called again?
Bud Bus.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's got a catchy name. So we deliver right out of our store in Marshfield. We deliver around the South Shore to Rockland, Kingston, Plymouth. There are a couple towns, unfortunately, that we are unable to deliver to, but hopefully in the future we'll make our way over there. But we're also delivering in Quincy in Boston. So we're going all over. We're trekking all over the South Shore. And right now, you know, there is all the products on our website are available for delivery, minus the ice cream. But everything's available, and there's plenty to shop from. And you can read online all about, you know, what the products are made of and all the different types of things we have on our website.
That, of course, is Alex. She is the general manager of South Shore Buds, located at 985 Plain Street in Marshfield. And she's Sarker, who is here. She's the assistant general manager. I just want to just take a moment. I did receive a text message, as was reported on the news at 6 o'clock, in regards to the procession for Marine Sergeant Matt Partica. I hope I'm saying his name correctly. I believe that his remains were going to be arriving at Logan. It's been delayed about 40 minutes to arrive in Hingham. It was supposed to be at 7:15. It's been delayed for a few minutes before 8 p.m. So just so folks who are heading there to pay their respects, just please keep that in mind. THC. Mm-hmm. I know what THC is, but also there's this thing that has been come to life since medical marijuana and recreation, and that is CBD. Mm-hmm. Is there a difference between the two?
Yeah, so there's definitely a difference between the two. There's a lot of cannabinoids, which is, again, what CBD and THC are involved and included within the cannabis plant itself. THC is a psychoactive component of the cannabis plant, so a lot of people say that it gives them a euphoric or a high kind of an effect with it. CBD is a non-psychoactive effect, so it doesn't alter your state of mind, but it can definitely, for a lot of people claim that it assists with things like pain, anxiety, inflammation, even sleep. So CBD, again, is the non-psychoactive compound within the cannabis plant.
Now, what's interesting is like if you went to a restaurant or a tavern, there's a place to eat, and then you have the bar, there's bartenders. I believe that there's a phrase coined for an individual who can help it, someone who is looking for whether they want a smoke or a concentrate or edibles, and they're called Bud Tenders.
Bud Tenders, yes. We have a great staff over at South Shore Buds of Bud Tenders, and they are very well-trained, very enthusiastic. They, you know, obviously get to try some of the products and offer their recommendations, and we keep them on their toes, and we keep them surprised in what we have in store. We're always getting new products in. We're always trying out new things. So our Bud Tenders are kind of, you know, our test subjects in a way of, like, tell us what you think of that. You know, we crowdsource our information a lot because, you know, cannabis interacts with most people differently, so we like to learn from each other in that way.
And understanding the different strains and mm-hmm. how things are harvested and grown is important, and how it has an effect on the individual who's using it, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. Everybody is different, so we always recommend, you know, somebody try something at a low dose and wait to see how it impacts them personally, because what, you know, I try is going to affect me one way, but it's going to affect Circa, you know, an entirely different way. So it's all about, like, taking your time to understand, you know, what you're trying, and not to overdo it. We never want anyone to have, you know, a negative experience. So we always say start with less and see how that goes. And then if you need to try a little bit more next time to get the, you know, intended effect, that's up to you.
Yeah. Always wait and don't be in a rush.
Yep. Mm-hmm. There's no rush. No. There's always time.
And I know I've heard stories from individuals who, you know, they had a white piece of chocolate and thought, I didn't feel anything, and then they gobble down the other half mm-hmm. of it, and then before you know it, you know, it's maybe they, you know, bit off a little bit more than they can actually chew and experience.
Yeah, they can take up to an hour to really get the full effect, so you want to give it time.
Absolutely, and just to jump on that as well, I think that's why it's so important now that we do have a regulated cannabis industry. You can get the education that you need and that you desired in order to consume products, but they're also third-party tested, so everything that we carry within our store has been tested by the state to ensure that there's not any contaminants, bacteria, heavy metals, anything like that, and that's just the guarantee that you have, and, you know, the accessibility that we're now so grateful to have with having recreational cannabis regulated. Mm-hmm.
So as we get ready to wrap up our segment, we got a few minutes, but I also want to make sure we dedicate enough time mm-hmm. For this fantastic event this Saturday, the 23rd, Shore Fest. What is Shore Fest going to be about?
So we are very excited to have Shore Fest. So basically what we're doing is getting a bunch of local vendors together, music, food, all sorts of things, to basically just spend time with our community and create a place where people can shop local and listen to some great music. My dad's band, The Inflatables, is actually playing, so I'm very excited to hear them play. But we got a lot of great music and food trucks. We got The Barking Claw, Wanderlust, and Hummingbird. Those are all different food trucks, and they've got some amazing menus. So, yeah, it's going to be 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. this Saturday at our store in Marshfield. It is a 21-plus event, but please come by and shop with us and check out our local vendor partners. I'm going to be doing some shopping that day. I don't know about you, Circa. I'm going to be buying some beautiful things.
Mm-hmm. I think what's great, I like the idea of not only you being the main sponsor of this, but also food trucks. Who doesn't love a good food truck?
Exactly.
Who doesn't? I mean, that's kind of like the thing these days, is the food truck. And then having a great band. Now, what kind of music does The Inflatables? That's a great name.
I know, right? It's a lot of classic rock, a lot of, you know, some Fleetwood Mac covers. I'm going to ask him to play a lot of, you know, cannabis-themed music. Dad, I know you're probably listening, so you already know what I'm going to ask. But, no, it's great. They have a great time, and it's just fun to see, you know, people enjoying themselves, and it's going to be a nice summer event, and we're going to do, you know, some fun stuff there and kind of say thank you to our customers that have been coming by.
How important is it for you ladies for the business to be integrated into the community and for folks to believe in what you have, even if, again, as we talked, began the conversation about stigmatism, mm-hmm. realize that you're professionals, you know what you're doing, your organization prides itself on that.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, a lot of our employees are locals. They've lived in Marshfield, worked in Marshfield their whole life, so to be able to integrate with the community and be a part of it, it just helps reduce that stigma even more. We're just, you know, we're another local business that's mm-hmm. out here trying to, you know, serve our community the best way we can. So we're always open to opportunities where we can get more involved with our business, or with our local, you know, businesses, and we're always trying to, you know, make some new friends, make new connections, and it's so important to us, you know.
Some new buds.
Some new buds. Yeah.
Buds.
Best buds.
What are some of the different buds that you actually offer? Some of the selections, because I'm always fascinated by the different names that are chosen.
We have some crazy names right now. We work with a kind of a smaller cultivation brand called Bailey's Buds, and right now we have a strain on our menu called Noxious Brew, and that is delicious. It's very nice, very relaxing, so it's kind of a fun name, but the names get crazy, and it really just comes down to us trying to figure, like the cultivators trying to figure out how to rename these strains that they've crossed genetically. So, you know, we're taking original strains that people have heard of and crossing them and creating even better strains that are more potent and more, you know, have more flavor, and they end up with these wacky names. But we kind of love it. It keeps things interesting.
Mm-hmm. Now, are the names something that's, who gets to create the names?
The cultivators that grow the flower. They do all the hard work, so they get to name their strains. They pick out, you know, the best phenotypes out of the group of seeds that they get. And that's why you might see, like, you know, Rainbow Chip number 11, because that was the 11th plant. They liked that one the best, so that's the one they wanted to grow.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Anything that we haven't touched upon during your time here in front of the microphones, but you feel important at least sharing with the listener right now?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you're skeptic or have questions, we really are here just to educate and provide those answers. So even if it means stopping by and just taking a look at what we have to offer and asking all the questions you can think of, that's exactly what we're here for. And we have such a friendly, welcoming staff and a beautiful store. So we just love to see anybody come in, whether they know what they want or they have every question in the book. We just love to make those connections and help people, you know, answer all the questions they have.
Ladies, I want to thank you so much for coming in and better educating the folks who are tuned in, especially if they are a Marshfield resident. But let's not forget that there are many other places that that South Shore Buds will deliver to. Mm-hmm. All they got to do is give a call or go on the website, right? Is there a website?
Yep, so SouthShoreBuds.com or BudBus.com. Either of those websites, you'll be able to see the menu and take a look at what we got.
Circa, anything in closing?
No, thank you so much for having us here today, Kevin. We really appreciate it, and we hope to see everyone that's listening at Shorefest on Saturday.
We'll have to have you back again.
Absolutely.
Make sure we have one of your bud tenders in here.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And then we could grill them and find out, you know, their experience in this and just have some fun with it and talk about, again, a thriving business with continued success.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's been a pleasure.
All right. We are going to step aside. Don't forget Shorefest coming this Saturday, the 23rd. Stop by Route 139. Monday Night Talk continues. We got Mike Brady, who's hanging out in the wing, state senator, in just a moment here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
I'm Tiny of Tiny & Sons Glass. My boys do a good job. Here's why. When they were kids, every summer we'd go to the automotive graveyard and take cars apart. Windshields, transmissions, generators. Then comes the fun part, putting it all back together. It was summer camp at the junkyard. And it worked. They're good boys. You can trust them.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
Go ahead, indulge yourself. Every Wednesday night, tune in to Talk with Francesca and join me for provocative conversation, intriguing stories, and inspiration. So sit back and relax, or be stimulated, or both, because being connected feels good, and who doesn't need more of that these days? Don't miss Talk with Francesca Wednesday nights at 9 on 95.9 WATD.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Right. I'm telling you, we're shifting gears fast here. Again, big thanks to the gals from South Shore Buds, Alex and Circa, assistant general manager, for being our guests. And We go from talking about South Shore Buds to State Senator Buds. we have Mike Brady, who serves the 2nd Plymouth-Bristol District. All right, so I thought I would make sure I had some information here. Brockton, East Bridgewater, Precincts 1 to 3. Halifax, Hanson, Plimpton, Whitman, Plymouth, Easton, Precincts 1 and 2. Did I miss any?
Yeah, not Plymouth, but it's part of Plymouth County. And as you mentioned, Easton is in Bristol County. And thank you, by the way, Kevin, for having me on tonight. We just come back from the State House in Boston where we
busy.
We passed the budget. It came out of a conference committee. But before I get into that, so as you know and for the listeners, the district is changing. Usually every 10 years they do redistricting.
Yep.
So they created a majority-minority district, which has a state representative. When I first got into the State House, I had the inner core of the city of Brockton, which was one of the first majority-minority districts. And based on demographics and the changes in the population, I have a new minority-majority district. So the towns, if I get elected, of course, next year, will be the city of Brockton, then it will be the towns of Whitman, Hanson, Halifax, and they're adding another precinct in East Bridgewater, so I will have the whole town of East Bridgewater, and then they're adding the town of Avon, where you knew my brother served as a select board member.
Bob, love Bob.
Many years, yeah. He was a good Brady, as we all know.
He was a good
unfortunately,
Brady.
He passed away a couple years ago.
During COVID, right?
Yeah, he got diagnosed with COVID, and he also had a heart attack and circulation issues running my mother's side of the family. So my poor brother died at age 65, and my sister, who lived in Whitman, died 12 years before that at age 65. So I got to keep an eye on my cholesterol like we all do. And I will admit, I take obviously cholesterol and high blood pressure pills, but I take fish oil. And I'll tell you, not the cheap brand from any particular local place, but it's a prescribed brand, and my numbers have been great since. And I won't tell you the name brand because I cannot advertise that on the radio, but I will tell you it's a prescribed fish oil. And it has worked wonders.
Do you take with the big pills?
Yeah, they're 2 in the morning. They're like a count 2 at night. But I'll tell you, my triglycerides have been great since. You know, we all know we got to eat better and watch our diet and exercise. But since I've been on these fish oil pills, my numbers have been great.
Well, Senator, it's been a long time since you were a kid on the streets of Brockton playing street hockey.
Yes, and I was a lot thinner then. I didn't put on any weight. I started putting the weight on because, I drove a truck from Malaya News back in the day and Superior Bakery working there. But when I got into the insurance business, because I was a life insurance agent before I got into politics, and I worked for a couple local companies, I became independent in 1995. Selling life insurance and disability, and that's a crazy year. As you know, I had to run for office, which I served on the school committee, then the city council for 14 years, and then got into the state legislature in 2008. And in 2015, when we lost Tommy Kenny, our great friend and advocate, I won a state senate seat, so I've been on the state senate since.
So let's talk about the Senate. You know, what was today like up at the House?
Well, today was a busy day. We passed the budget. As you know, the budget process comes from the governor. He proposes it to the state Senate and House of Representatives.
Yep.
The House does their version, and the Senate does their version.
Right.
And there's always differences. You know, like, for instance, sports betting, which I've had a lot of advocacy on behalf, that's in a separate bill, but there's a different version. The House version includes college sports betting. The Senate version does not.
Right.
And that's in a conference committee, so both sides have 3 members that kind of hash out the differences. And, hopefully that'll come to fruition because there's a lot of revenue and jobs from that.
Mm.
Now, as far as the budget, the same process went through. So it came out of the conference committee, and we both voted on it in the House and the Senate today. So it passed and is going on to the governor. And he has a right to look at the budget, make any changes, vetoes, if he decides to.
Slash that.
And usually it does happen with vetoes. And then
that's his final budget, too.
Yes. So hopefully he doesn't cut too much. But I will tell you, the good news, revenue is up in the Commonwealth. We're going to be delivering more local aid than we've ever had in the history of the Commonwealth, not only with Chapter 70 money for the schools, the money for the Student Opportunity Act, but also unrestricted local aid, which gives these cities and towns their desire to spend on what they wish. Because some things are directed towards schools or roads or whatever. This unrestricted local aid is a huge increase, but we know what the private sector is going through, too. And times are tough for a lot of people. They can't afford, food prices have gone through the roof, gas prices. So like the state, we have to be fiscally responsible, like the private sector. And we are putting more money in the stabilization fund to prepare for that so-called rainy day and to put more savings to prepare for the future because, you know, there's a lot of predictions out there, but you never know what is going to happen. So you got to put more money to save for that stabilization fund. But we are giving proposed tax breaks to the consumer, too. There's a proposal to, and I'll get into the budget in a second, but a separate part of that is they're proposing to give a check from the Commonwealth, anybody making $38,000 to $150,000, and it still has to get weighed in on the Senate side, it passed in the House, but they'll get a check of $150 to spend as they wish. It could go towards gas, food, or whatever. And then if they're a couple, they can make up to $150,000. So it's $38,000 to $100,000 if they're single, $38,000 to $150,000 if they're a couple. And we did get some concerns from residents that make under $38,000. Well, what about us? But they've already gotten some checks, and there will be more help coming to them. I know that they've given some checks out for different $500 checks and so forth. That is still in the process. So everything is still being hashed out on how it's going to be divvied up and it's going to be debated on. But the big thing and the big news, as you mentioned today, Kevin, was the budget. And that passed, and I can go through some of the initiatives on that, but it's the highest increase in local aid to the cities and towns.
How as somebody who has served on various levels of local state government, how important is it? You hear from you're a man of the people. You hear from them all the time, whether you are in a local supermarket, an eatery. How important is it to them that you're able to deliver monies that's going to either help various programs or, you know, the big thing when it comes to some folks who live in a community is, hey, when are they going to fix my road? Are they going to put sidewalks in? You hear these things. How important is it to you as a legislator?
This is so important. And, you know, there's a wide range of concerns from our constituents on a wide range of issues, but the local aid that comes from the state into these cities and towns is so important. You know, Proposition 2.5 was voted on several years ago, so the local communities can only raise their local tax revenue 2.5% unless they go for an override, which is very difficult, especially in tough times. Some communities, I know in my district, did vote for an override recently because they were talking about laying off police officers and firefighters, but it is very difficult. Even in the city of Brockton, there was a couple overrides proposed that never get passed because people are struggling. They pay high taxes. They want to make sure their tax dollars are given in the right area, and they have to balance their budget. So state revenue is up, and it's a lot of capital gains that came into the state, a lot of these corporations that have made a lot of money. And I know you just had people in the marijuana business here. Now, that doesn't pay local taxes to the local thing because it's a non-taxable thing at the federal level, but there is revenue created from that's coming in to spend back into the district. So there's a lot of other initiatives in the real estate market that has gone through the roof. Even though interest rates have started to increase a little bit, the tax revenue from a piece of property being sold, that's all going into the state as well as your local committee. So the budget right now that we just passed coming out of the conference committee is a $52.708 billion spending plan, which that's a lot of money, but these cities and towns desperately depend on our local state aid given to the cities and towns. And we also put in $100 million transferred to the pension liability fund because we have to take care of pension liability, and $100 million to reduce liabilities. And then there was $266 million to support MBTA workforce safety. I know there's a big hammer in the state also because of the abusive costs out there. Excuse me for burping there. But that being said, we want to make sure the residents are safe. You know, there's been breakdowns on the MBTA. It's been a nightmare. There's talk about even them going into another thing, like we took care of other agencies and combined them into other agencies. So that was a big hearing on that today. But there is money in the budget to take care of some of the infrastructure costs.
Excellent. Well, now, so this is what I need to ask you, and that is what about the transportation bond bill?
Well, that passed recently in both the House and the Senate.
Right.
And there's a lot of money coming in. I know I got money for Halifax, for Brockton, some other communities in Hanson.
Right.
And I know our state representatives, our colleagues in the House, passed some transportation bond bill. There's a big difference. So a transportation bond bill is on paper. It has to be released by the governor. So it's a good idea. And I know even years ago in Hanover, there was a good chunk of change in a bond bill for some road work in Hanover. But unless the governor releases it, whoever that governor may be, It's only on a piece of paper. And, of course, next year, you know, Governor Baker's not running for re-election, so we will have a new governor. We'll see what happens next year. Right. But that, there's other bond bills out there, too. So a bond bill is good on paper, but until the money is officially released, it just sits here on a piece of paper. But we do put in bond initiatives. Hopefully they do get funded.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with the state senator, Mike Brady, as he joins us and talks with us about all things that are happening up at the State House, from the budget, which was, I guess, voted on today.
Yes.
What was the session like?
It was pretty not too controversial, because you cannot, once the budget comes out of the conference committee, you can't file any additional amendments. It is just an up and down vote. Now, when we're deliberating the budget that came to the House and then came to us in the Senate, there was a lot of discussion, a lot of amendments are filed. Some amendments get accepted, some do not. I was able to get local aid for different things from the Plymouth County watershed in my Senate district, money for Halifax, money for some roads, money for a soccer field in Hanson, and some for like different community groups, whether it be Haitian refugees or immigrants, some money for schools. School on Wheels is a big thing. It helps out a lot of less fortunate families.
Right.
I got money for Bridgewater State and Massasoit, because they do a lot of initiatives, and they have a lot of constituents in my district that might start off at Massasoit, then they can transfer the credits to Bridgewater State or another four-year state school. So we were able to get some of that, but that's all during the deliberations. Then it goes, as I mentioned, to a conference committee. There's three members of the House of Representatives, mm-hmm. three members of the Senate. They hammer it out, and sometimes there's a lot of discussions, and you weigh in. You want to make sure that the things you put in your version of the budget stays, and that doesn't guarantee that it's going to happen. I know we got some money in there for the retirees and the mass retirees, which was good, and we want to take care of our seniors and so forth, so there was money in there for that. But it finally came out of the conference committee, and it was just, as I mentioned, an up and down vote. You can either vote against it or you can vote in favor. You can't do any amendments once it comes out of the conference committee.
No, I don't know. As to any amendments, did you have a chance to file any amendments in the past few weeks that would be part of this particular budget?
Yeah, and it was even before, a couple weeks back, it was probably over a month ago, and I was able to get quite a few amendments in there. And being a senator, you're allocated a little more amendments in based on what the amendments are. Sure. And as I mentioned, I got money for a soccer field in Hanson. I got money for the Plymouth County watershed, because Silver Lake and the Mon Ponsa ponds, they feed into Silver Lake,
sure.
the West Mon Ponsa and so forth, and a lot of people's drinking water that goes between the towns of Hanson and Halifax all the way into Brockton, so that's important. Some other things I got for different, like I said, School on Wheels is important. They feed children. There's a lot of things for after-school programs we got in the budget. So, and the good thing is, unlike we hear in the media with the rest of the world, Massachusetts works very well in a nonpartisan, bipartisan way of working. Again, nobody agrees on everything. That's part of democracy. I'm a Democrat, but I don't agree with every Democratic initiative. But we work it out in the conference committees or in the deliberations when we have public hearings. And we've got a great crew that works together, and I think that's what keeps Massachusetts moving forward. Even though the cliche, oh, Massachusetts is a liberal state, and we are predominantly, you know, a higher Democratic ratio, but there's more unenrolled independents than ever before in the Commonwealth. And I think that's where individuals may not want to side with one particular party or another, but they have may have supportive views on some Democratic things and some Republican things. But that's the good thing about Massachusetts. In the you know, the woman's choice about abortion was a big issue. As you know, the Supreme Court at the federal level made changes. Now, that was in part of the budget, but we also put it in a separate bill. And it's not just about people to have abortions, but to people to get education on reproductive rights and education on the reproduction. And I'll tell you, I had a lot of calls on that, a lot of concerns at both sides of the ticket, but I believe, you know, it shouldn't be my decision. Whatever people's religious beliefs are, whatever a woman's choice is, it should be left up to them. And, you know, whether their religious beliefs, they can, that's freedom of religion. They have the right to choose. It's not forcing anybody to do anything. It gives them the freedom of choice.
Final question I have for you, and that is seeking re-election. If folks want to get involved with your campaign, or they have questions in regards to your bid to be the senator for another 2 years, how can they get involved with your campaign?
Well, they can go to call me directly on my cell phone. I do have an office and a campaign headquarters in Brockton. We just opened up a couple weeks ago, right on Route 27 in Brockton on Pleasant Street near the Westgate Mall. It's an old real estate office, 543 Pleasant Street, right near 7-Eleven. But they can contact me directly at 508-345-8632. 508-345-8632. Or they can email me at Brady Brockton, one word, BradyBrockton, at AOL.com.
And if folks, what if you have a constituent who has a concern? I know you have great folks who take care of constituent concerns. How can they get in touch with you through that way?
Well, they can contact me directly, as I gave out my cell phone or my BradyBrockton at AOL.com email address. But for constituent issues, they can always call the office, which is 617-722-1200, 617-722-1200. And then my email at the State House is michael.brady@massachusettssenate.gov. So it's michael.brady@massachusettssenate.gov.
And anything that we haven't touched upon, I got a minute left. Anything we haven't touched upon but you want to at least close with?
Yes, thank you, Kevin. And besides the budget that we passed, it is bringing much more local aid to the communities and unrestricted local aid. We are working on an economic development bill, and that's going to be for the economy, help the economy out, help businesses out, et cetera. But I'm going to be able to hopefully get some earmarks in that budget, and I've reached out to local town officials, select board members, town managers. They have emailed my office of what their priorities are, and I'm listening to the residents. We are limited, of course, what we can spend, like everything, but they can contact me at either of those contact informations that I gave out, you know, michael.brady@massachusettssenate.gov or the office, 617-722-1200.
He is Mike Brady, your state senator, serving in the 2nd Plymouth-Bristol District. Senator, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much, and I look forward to coming here again, and say hello to your father for me. He was a great friend. We used to meet at breakfast down at a local breakfast place in Brockton, and he put in his dues working for the city of Brockton many years.
He did, and he still thinks about when you sang happy birthday to him recently via Zoom, so he appreciates that.
Well, I appreciate doing that. Thank you.
You got it. We're going to step aside. We get the final segment on board. Joe Weeks will be joining us in just a moment. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
You want to feel important. You want to be a part of something bigger, something that matters and can help change things. You want to feel like you belong. We know. We felt that way, too. And that's why we did something about it. We aren't just Army National Guard soldiers. We are normal people just like you. And together, we can make a difference. Take on your legacy. Visit NationalGuard.com to find out more.
Sponsored by the Massachusetts Army National Guard. Aired by the Massachusetts Broadcasters Association at this station.
By the middle of the week, so much news has come your way, you need your own team to sort it out. Lucky for you, there's Jared Valenzuela and the JV team to talk about the things you've heard and catch you up on some things you might not know.
I'm Jared Valenzuela. Join me and my guests as we have fun with current events and try to put things into perspective each week. Sponsored by Corey Welch of Boom Realty. Catch the JV team every Wednesday night at 6:15 here on 95.9 WATD.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back. Final segment. Just a quick note. I've received correspondence in regards to folks who are awaiting the arrival. I guess there's a procession for Marine Sergeant Matt Pateka. I hope I'm saying his name correctly. Who is supposed to be arriving from Logan. It's been delayed. He's supposed to be arriving in Hingham. And it's supposed to be a procession. And my understanding now is that this could be delayed until 8:45, as I guess most airlines and airports are experiencing delays at this particular time. So if folks are heading out or waiting, that's what I'm receiving right now, is that there is a bit of a delay in the sergeant, his arrival to the airport and to the great community of Hingham. Right now, joining us, a gentleman who we've had on in previous discussions here to talk with us about what he does for a special organization, Italian Home for Children. We have Mr. Joe Weeks. He is the Senior Vice President of Programs. He used to tell us a little bit about what the organization does and why you should know what they do and what they provide for programs and services. Joe, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hello, Mr. Tocci. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I'm very happy to hear your voice again. I get excited every time you ask me to come on this show. I get excited, get a little bit antsy. It's great to hear your voice.
Talk to us again. We've had you on previously because you are a licensed mental health counselor and you are a national certified counselor who has many, many years of experience. We've had you on to talk about different items and stuff. But talk to us about your role now with the Italian Home for Children.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about that. So one of the things that when you would ask me to come on is, in this new role, right now with the way mental health is in across the country, let alone Massachusetts, and there's a lot of great things happening on the legislator's side, kind of making commitments to fund mental health services across the Commonwealth, and the Executive Office of Health and Human Services is rolling out what's called a roadmap to kind of overhaul the way mental health services is done. It came at a great time in my professional career because I was switching jobs and took a leadership role with the Italian Home for Children to help kind of bolster up and strengthen mental health in Massachusetts. And one of the great things that I've always loved the Italian Home for Children, so it was a blessing when I was able to come on board. But one of the things I like the most is the array of services. So right now I help oversee a whole host of programs. Right now we have the capacity to have, five what they call intensive treatment residences, which are essentially group homes for kiddos that are 5 to 13 years old. We also have community service agencies, which work with the same level of youth, but at the same time, they're kiddos that are exposed on the autistic spectrum. It's a brand new pioneering way of providing treatment to kids that are displaced from their homes. So it's a great opportunity there. I'm also in charge of a fantastic school called the Pilata School. It's right in Jamaica Plain. And we have about, 35 kids-ish there at any given moment. We're running fantastic summer camps for the Department of Children and Families there now, as well as a couple of substance use clinics and mental health clinics as well for the entire lifespan. So there's no shortage of things to do.
And this is an organization that, if they're not new on the scene, they've been around for over a century, correct?
Yeah, we've just celebrated our 103rd birthday, which is great. And I can't wait to be part of the next 103 years, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the programs that they do offer. I mean, you already touched upon them, whether it's home and community-based programs, the Pilates School, even COVID-19 response really involved with helping folks who are affected by the pandemic.
Yeah, so we've actually helped out a lot with that to help get the community access to shots, to free clinics, to rapid tests, things along those lines. One of the greatest things that I'm actually really proud of that we were able to do is just try to keep the kiddos that are housed with us safe during the COVID response and during the COVID pandemic. We had about 45 kids living with us at the time during that entire pandemic, which we still haven't, unfortunately, we haven't come out the other side of yet because even as early as today, some of our, actually a good chunk of our staff at one of the schools, tested positive. So we're still feeling the ramifications of that and what that looks like. But I'm very proud of the community response that we had to provide just everyone in that general Boston area the ability to get a test or to get vaccinated if they needed to.
And how are they able to provide so many programs and help so many people? I mean, is it? I would think that they are a nonprofit and that they count on funding from those who are willing to donate and assist.
Oh yeah, I mean, we are a nonprofit, and I'd like to say that we're the only player in town that does things like this. But you know, hats off and kudos to all of my colleagues that are at different organizations doing something very similar to us. What I love about the nonprofit mental health world is that it's one of the only sectors where, especially in the health and human services field, where you don't really have competitors. You have other organizations doing something similar to what you do, all pooling their resources together and really trying to make something better for the community and make an improvement that's much better than when you came into it. So I'd like to say that, we did an amazing job, but really hats off to everybody for doing an amazing job the entire time. What's made us successful is we've been able to kind of see the lay of the land and how mental health is evolving over the past few years, especially with the pandemic. And we've been able to take advantage of that. We've been able to get ourselves in develop strategic partnerships with larger organizations, smaller organizations, organizations that do something that we wish we could do, but they do it a little bit better maybe, and we're able to kind of help out with them. We help mentor other organizations that maybe we do something a little bit better of. So it's really just been a huge success story across the board. What we've been able to do really well, though, is just kind of forecast where the trends are leading and try and take advantage of those as the opportunities come up.
What do you feel that you bring? What do you bring to the table as a member of the team for the Italian Home for Children?
What I bring is really kind of like an open door, optimistic mindset. Really, I mean, you and I have been friends for a long time, but professionally what the resume says. But I think beyond what the resume has and what my experience has, really what it is trying to identify what people do really well or what people really do better than you and bringing them on the team and making sure that everybody around you is better. And you try to do the best that you can to make them better as a result of the teams you put together. So I think for me, it's really just a matter of eyeing out a good set of quality people that you want to be around and cultivating that talent and just making something special out of it.
What are some of the campuses that you have, other than you talked about the Pallotta home? What other locations are there? Do you have different satellites around the Commonwealth?
Yeah, so we're actually going right into making that happen. We're expanding into the Southeast region now. I have a couple of ideas for expanding into the western part of the state and the northern part of the state. But one of the things I actually like about the Italian home, because prior to coming here, I was overseeing a lot of different services across many different states in New England. But what I like about Italian Home right now is that the entire, what we call continuity of care, so everything from outpatient, like traditional outpatient work, to inpatient, 24/7 care, everything's housed in the same area. So if you live within those areas in our catchment area, or if you're a kiddo that's receiving services for something that we offer, everything that you need to be successful is right on that Jamaica Plain campus, which I'm very, very proud of. We also, which I want to just kind of put a plug in, is that we also have a splash pad that we just got donated to us, which we christened this summer. And we also have a fantastic pool that the kids from the school and the residence programs are able to use, as well as the summer camps. So we are planning on expanding, but a vast majority of our services right now are in the Jamaica Plain campus.
Yeah, I'm actually perusing some of your social media stuff and seeing, like, having a garden at the Pallotta School, or some of the other things that you offer. Like you said, there's you had a recognition day that happened. Memories are made at the Italian Home. The therapeutic summer camp that combined summer fun with clinical support. I mean, these are all things that are that if you're looking for ways to fortify your child's, your child, and if there's a need there, that there's a place to go.
Oh, yeah. No, we're always about child and family development. So, I mean, I do suggest everyone goes to ItalianHome.org and checks out the website, because if you're someone that's looking for something for your kiddo to do over the summer, if you're looking for services, because I can tell you right now, mental health services, whether it be individual, family, or relationship, couples counseling, there's wait lists like you wouldn't believe. And I think anyone looking for services knows that that is absolutely true. But come over to us. I mean, we have a lot of openings right now that we're looking to try to provide as much services as possible. But yeah, we do all kinds of activities, the camps, the pool. We will come to your house if you want to. Whatever you really need to really be successful, that's what the Italian Home's really kind of known for the past 100 years. Also, as an employer, we do staff appreciation days all the time. One of the best things that I enjoy about going to work every day is you never know which food truck's going to show up to the to the parking lot. So even though my waistline isn't actually thanking me very much, I am very happy to say that it's worked out pretty good for us.
Joe, we got a few minutes left with you here, and I want to give you an opportunity. I know we've done a little bit of blanket coverage as to what the Italian Home for Children offers. Is there anything that we haven't mentioned or something that is essential that we get across to the listeners here on Monday Night Talk?
Yeah, I mean, the only essential thing that I would say is that if you're someone that's, it has nothing to do with the Italian Home, but I would say this. The other day, the helpline was launched, 988. So I would say that that if you are someone struggling with anything in your life and you need somebody to talk to, that you call 988, and that we actually start really blanketing that and making sure that people know that those services are available to them. The minute you call that, a crisis clinician will be available to be able to speak with you to help you if they can, or at least connect you to resources that would be able to help you. It's a fantastic resource that a lot of people have been advocating for a very long time, and it's something that the legislator had pushed through and that is finally launched. So the Italian Home right now, we are dedicated to making sure that we're able to be there to help people in those times of need. But really what it comes down to is, if you need help, ask for it. And, this time is more crucial than ever, because it's really hard to find services right now. So any way you can get them is a great idea.
And as we close out our show, as we close out the segment, important information. If folks want to find out more, if they want to get involved, they want to see what there are for programs, especially, I know we're in the middle of summer, but, it's going to be fall before you know it, and I know that you guys have great after-school programs as well. How can folks find out more about the Italian Home?
Well, there's a couple different ways. I would say go to www.italianhome.org. You can email me at jweeks, J-W-E-E-K-S, at italianhome.org, or you can call me, 781-267-3808. I'm around all the time.
Joe, I got to thank you so much for joining us. I hope your summer's going well. I hope you've had a chance to do something fun and exciting, or at least relax for a few moments.
Oh, yeah. The weather is fantastic. The pool is open. I am loving life. I really appreciate it. And thank you for the opportunity for coming on and being able to give my little pitch.
You got it. And again, the idea is to kind of share what we do here in and around the South Shore and beyond. And If it's gonna be for the betterment of other people, then that's what we do here. Is we spread the word, pass the bullhorn around, and give folks information as they need it, if they need it. So again, thank you so much, Joe.
All right, you're a good man. I appreciate it. Thanks for the time.
You got it. There he is. Joe Weeks was our guest as we were talking a little bit about the Italian Home for Children. I can't believe it. Time is like it's just gone by, but. If you've missed any of the radio program, we do our best to put the podcast up. We've had some great guests this evening from, like I said, we had two state senators who were in, and we talked about various things from the state budget and what they were able to get into the state budget, to South Shore Buds, finding out more about them, and how you can save money using community solar farms. It's a great idea. Why isn't everybody doing it? Who knows? But we were able to give you information in regards to that. So we're glad to be able to provide you with that information. Just so you know, a quick programming note, in the next couple of weeks, we will have various political forums as Monday Night Talk will team up with the WATD newsroom and provide you with primary candidates forums to keep you better informed or get you better informed with where they stand on the issues so you can make the right decision when you step into the voting booth come primary day. And I'm sure following that, we'll also have stuff in the fall where some of this, the radio time is going to be dedicated towards political forums leading up to November, the general election. It is that time. Got a lot of elections that are going on. So you, again, are tuned into Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD. Great job. Thank you to Larry. He was busier on the phones than normal tonight. So thank you, Larry. Tip of the hat to you. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great evening.